Okay. First of all, a lot of what I'm going to say, pretty much most of what I'm going to say, is straight out of this sefer here, which just came out by my Rav. Rav Yossi Rimon is the Rav of Alon Shutaron. Just look this out. The cute little sefer. It's called Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbat, with appendices for Purim Meshulash and Bir Matzos. All the fun halachos things that happen this year. And let's start with the Mishnah at the very beginning of Masechet Megillah. The Mishnah tells us that Megillah nikret b'yud aleph, b'yud bet, b'yud gimel, b'yud aleph, b'tet vav, lo pachot v'lo yotzi. The Megillah can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th of Adar, no earlier and no later. What in the world does the Mishnah mean by that? Because we are usually familiar only with the 14th and the 15th. What's this 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th? What? Oh. So the Mishnah explains, Krachim amukafim choma mimotzi Yoshua binun karim b'tetvav. Kfarim v'ayarot gedolot karim b'yudalot. In theory, we have two dates for Purim, which, by the way, is a fascinating concept, which is not the topic of the present discussion, but it's worth thinking about. There's no other example of this in halacha that we have. In fact, normally in halacha, we have a principle called lo titgodu. You try very hard that it shouldn't look, as the Gemara says, kishtei torot. You want all of Am Yisrael doing the same thing. Here we have a halacha which specifically requires certain communities to do it one way and certain a different way. Tzat muzan. Okay, but that's just something to think about. In any case, the krachim amukafim choma, the walled cities, that have walls and states of Yeshua Binun, they read on the 15th. And everything else, villages and large cities, even if they don't have walls, even large cities that don't have walls, read on the 14th. Ella, shehat kfarim makdinim liyom haknisa. However, the rabbis, when they did this, they instituted the following provision. Kfarim, villages, can read on the Yom HaKnisa. What's the Yom HaKnisa? So Rashi explains here that Mondays and Thursdays was the day that was set aside for the Batei Din to convene. That's why we read the Torah on Mondays and Thursdays also. That's called the Yom HaKnisa. And what happens is that on Mondays and Thursdays, the villagers will come into the city. I think that's also when they had the markets, so that they came in also for economic reasons, but halakhically that's when they're going to come in. If you have to go to Beit Din, that's when the Beit Din is in session. So the villagers come into the big cities. And what the rabbis were concerned about is that in the villages, which are small communities, there may not be somebody who knows how to read the Megillah. And therefore, the villagers will not be able to read the Megillah on their own. They're going to have to go to the city. All the villagers are going to have to go to the city to hear the Megillah. And therefore, the rabbis allowed them to come to the city earlier than Purim. If, depending on how the days of the week turn out, as you'll see in a second, the rabbis allowed them to come to the villages, to the cities earlier, a few days before Purim, in order to hear the Megillah. Kitzad. Chal yot yudalad b'sheni. If the 14th of Adar is on Monday, so then kfarim ve'ayarot yudalot kfarim bo be'yom. Then the villages will read on that day, because that's the day, that's the Yom HaKnisa. They'll go into the city on that day. That's the day that they go into the city anyway. The cities will read on that day. And then the walled cities will read on Tuesday. Chaliot b'shlishi obrivi. If the 14th of Nisan is on Tuesday or Wednesday, so then kfarim makdimim liyom haknisa. Then the villagers will read it on the previous Monday, which would be either the 13th or the 12th. Meaning if Yudalot is on Tuesday, obviously, then they'll read on the 13th. If your dalit is on Wednesday, then they'll read already on the 12th, 2 days earlier, which would be Monday. Ayarot gedolot korim bo bayom. In the big cities, they don't need the Yom HaKnisa. In the big cities, they have people know how to read, so they'll read right then on Tuesday or Wednesday. Mukafot chom al machar. Chal yot b'chamishi, if the 14th comes out on Thursday. So then, kfarim v'ayarot gedolot korim bo bayom. Then once again, the villagers don't need to read early, because Thursday they also come into town. So then they will read on Thursday. Mukafot chom al machar. And they will read it, and then they'll then the Mukafot Choma will read it on Friday. Chaliot Erev Shabbat. Now we have the situation we had this year. Purim comes out on Friday. Kfarim makdinim liyom haknisa. So then the villagers will read it the previous day on Thursday, which would be the 13th of Adar. Ayarot gidolot u'mukafot chom akorim bo bayom. And then the cities, the open cities, will read on Yudal, which is on Friday. And also the Mukafot Choma will also read on Friday. Chaliot b'Shabbat, the Mishnah goes on to a situation that cannot happen nowadays. The way our calendar works out, Yudal Adar never comes out on Shabbat, but that's only because we have a set calendar. That's why the concept of Purim Meshulash only exists in Yerushalayim and any other walled cities that may happen to exist today. But when they used to be Mekadesh al Pi Re'iyah, that's Rat Hashem, when we will again Mekadesh al Pi Re'iyah, so then there are no set rules. And it could be that the 14th of Nisan, of Adar, excuse me, would come out on Shabbat. In that case, Kfarim v'ayarot gidolot makdimim v'karim le'yom ha'knisa. That's very interesting. So then the villagers are going to go back on Thursday indeed. In the city, they're also going to meet on Thursday, not on Friday, which is an interesting... they're going to go back from the 14th to the 12th, and meeting on Thursday. Umukafot chom al-machar, and then the walled cities will read on Sunday. And finally, Kaliot achar Shabbat. If the 14th comes out on Sunday, so then Kfarim makdinim liyom haknisa. Then the villagers have to go all the way back to Thursday. That's how you get the 11th. That's the earliest possible day, because that's already 3 days earlier. V'ayarot gidolot kfarim bo biyom on Sunday, umukafot chom al-machar on... And Mukhafot Chama would then read on Monday. So here in this Mishnah, we already see the idea that if you have a situation like we have this year, that Yudalit comes out on Friday, so the Kfarim would read on Thursday, that's a din that's not really relevant anymore in our present Mitzvot. But what's important to us is that not only do the Ayarot read Bobayom on Friday, but the Mukhafot Chama also read on Friday instead of on Shabbat. Yeah.
Rather keep on assuming that the old cities... Like,
if
you see, always
think
of walled cities as big cities.
No, there's three categories. There's Kfarim, Ayarot, Gedolot, and Krachim.
Yeah, the walled cities are never the small cities.
Oh, no, if it's Mukaf Choma, I don't care how big it is, then it reads on...
Well, they're not able to do the same way that the small cities are.
I mean, what if you have a Mukaf Choma that's so small that there's no one there who knows how to read the Megillah?
Yeah. It seems to be
assumed that's not happening. Right, it seems to be assumed that's not happening. That wasn't built into the Takana. Wall cities, I mean, it makes sense also. You don't build a wall around a tiny village. You build a wall around a city. Okay. Now, the Gemara on Daf Dalet, Amud Bet, asks why it is that we don't read the Megillah on Shabbat. Whether it's Yudal or Tedvav, it comes out on Shabbat, why can't we read the Megillah on that day? The Gemara says here, the Kulei Alma, there's a discussion that the Mishnah has only one opinion, there's a Braita with different opinions, actually two different Braita, a number of different opinions in the Tanayim about how to do it. I won't get into that, but the Gemara points out the Kulei Alma, not only according to the opinion that's brought down in the Mishnah, but according to the other opinions also, Megillah b'Shabbat lo karina. You don't read the Megillah on Shabbat. My Tama. Why? Amar Rabba, hakol chayavim b'kriyat Megillah, ve'ein hakol b'kiyim b'mikra Megillah. Everyone is obligated to read the Megillah, but not everyone knows how. Gzeirah shem yitlena b'yado, v'yedech eitzel baki l'umod, v'yavirena arba amok b'shut rabim. We're afraid that someone will need to read the Megillah, and doesn't know how, so he's going to go and take the Megillah, and go take it to somebody and ask him to read the Megillah for him, and if it's on Shabbat, he'll wind up carrying on Shabbat. The Hainu Taima, the Shofar, the Hainu Taima, the Lulav. Very similar to what we have according to with regard to Shofar and Lulav. On Rosh Hashanah, if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, as it sometimes does, so then we don't blow Shofar. And if, and on Sukkot, even though in theory we should have Lulav all 7 days, even if the first day, which is Minat Torah, comes out on Shabbat, we don't take a Lulav. Both of which are Gzerot Midrabanan. For the same, very similar concern, we're afraid that someone will carry the shofar or the lulav in Rishut HaRabim, and therefore the rabbis eliminated those mitzvot. The Gemara tells us, Yesh koch b'yad chachamim, la'akor davar min ha-Torah, and they, b'shev v'al ta'aseh, and the rabbis, huh?
There are
Shechter.
Eon Shechter is there in halacha.
In regard to what?
It was around the point in Rav Adelson's Shabbos that possibly if there was Zeres made that were the Gezeres against, like, when they're Lakar and something in Sarah, and they make a Gezeres that actually goes against something, like Shechter, like the Gila. It made the difference of the things that when Tama changes, they should. And I was just like,
there's no one around during the nowadays.
Right.
What, he thinks we should blow shofar?
He said, why not? There will also raise the question.
A hypothetical, but not
yeah, right.
Okay, fine. In any case, the Gemara, according to Rabbah, so a very similar situation applies with regard to Megillah, and that's why we don't read Megillah on Shabbat. Rav Yosef, however, gives a different reason. Mipnei she'einehen shel anim, nisuot b'mikra Megillah. The poor people are very much looking forward to Mikra Megillah. Why are the poor people looking forward to Mikra Megillah? Because of Matanot Rav Yonim. Matanot Rav Yonim, apparently, the Gemara feels, is connected directly to Mikra Megillah. People would come together to give Megillah, and that's when the people would give out Matanot Rav Yonim. And if we made Mikra Megillah on Shabbat, says Rav Yosef, even if people would have to go ahead and make sure to give Matanot Rav Yonim some other day, maybe, but this opportunity that all the people are together, and Amiyam are there, Amiyam look forward to Mikra Megillah because it's a time that they get a lot of money and they need this desperately. And perhaps if it would happen on Shabbat, obviously we wouldn't be able to give Matanot Rav Yonim on Shabbat, and the institution of Matanot Rav Yonim would be damaged, and the poor people wouldn't benefit as much. In order to avoid that, we don't need the Megillah on Shabbat. That's what Rav Yosef says. So we have two potential reasons here. Now, the Ture Evin, which is an Achron by the author of the Shagas Aryeh, he's bothered by the following situation. Tzvi Evin seems to be wondering how the rabbis could come along after the takana of Mikra Megillah is a very, very early takana. In fact, it's not a mitzvah d'oraita, of course, but it's more than just a mitzvah d'rabbanan. It's recorded in Tanakh, it's in the Megillah, so it's called a mitzvah d'ivrei Kabbalah, and the takana comes from Anshei Knesset HaGedolah themselves. And therefore, it's a very, very strong takana, Midivrei Kabbalah. It's not a daraita, but it's much more strong than an average, ordinary Jerobanan. And how could a later Beit Din come along after Anshei Knesset HaGedolah made this takana and change it and say that you don't have to do it on Shabbat? When the principle is, and again, those in Torah Nisina I'm sure are familiar with this, that a aim Beit Din Rashai Levatel Divrei Beit Din Chavero. Right? For one Beit Din to overrule the rulings of a previous Beit Din, it has to be both larger and considered greater than the previous one. So who can go ahead and change the takana of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah? And Turi Evin gives basically two possible answers. According to Rabbah, he says, it's not a question at all. Because the concept of the chashash of Chilul Shabbat, we know, allows Chachamim to remove the mitzvah of shofar and lulav, which are deoraita. So if Yesh Kach, Yad Chachamim, Makor, this is not a normal situation of a Beit Din overruling a previous Beit Din. It's a different principle. And Yesh Kach, Yad Chachamim, Makor, that I'm going to tell you. The rabbis have the power to command us not to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar or of lulav, which are deoraita, then they can also. Command us not to do a mitzvah d'rabbanan or divrei kabbalah from a previous Beit Din. He says, but that only works if you understand like Rabbah, that the reason we don't read Megillah on Shabbat is because of the concern that people will carry the Megillah. If you understand like Rav Yosef, that the issue is here because mipnei she'einehem shel anim nisua b'mikra Megillah, then that's not the type of thing that could allow a later Beit Din to overrule the rulings of an earlier Beit Din. And therefore, what you're going to have to say is it must be, according to Rav Yosef, that it's not that a later Beit Din got up and decreed that we don't read the Megillah on Shabbat. It would have to be that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, when they made the original Takana, built in this concept that you don't do it on Shabbat in order to protect the Anim. If that's the case, it would come out that according to the Turei Evin, according to Rabbah, the idea of reading on Shabbat is a later gzera. In other words, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah made a mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and a later Beit Din came around and said, no, we're canceling that because of, we're going to be okay Davar Min HaTorah, and instead we're going to read it on Friday. Whereas according to Rav Yosef, one second, it would have to be Anshei Knesset HaGedolah that made that thing. Now what difference does that make? It means when Yerushalmim, in a, what we're eventually going to call Purim Mishulash, we didn't get to the Mishulash part yet, but when Yerushalmim are going to be reading Megillah on Friday instead of on Shabbat, on Yud Daled. So according to Rav Yosef, this is a full-fledged Mikra Megillah with the koach of the Mitzvah Midivrei Kabbalah, exactly the same as every other year. But according to Rabbah, it would turn out that no, the regular reading of a Mikra Megillah is Mitzvah Midivrei Kabbalah, but the Yerushalmim who read on Friday and Purim Mishulash are only doing a Mitzvah Derabbanan. Lamai Nachkamina. If that's the case, it would turn out that this year, a Yerushalmi would not be able to be Motzi. Let's say I live in Alon Shabbat, right? That's not Yerushalayim, I keep Purim on Yom Tov. And let's say I'm not traveling to Yerushalayim, I sleep in Alon Shabbat, I wake up in Alon Shabbat, and I have the day of Yudalad, the Gamma. But I happen to travel to Yerushalayim during the day of Yudalad on Friday morning. Or a Yerushalmi happens to travel out to me. And now we have two people. We have a what's called a Ben Ir and a Ben Krach. Me, the guy who lives in Alon Shul, who's Chayev in Yudalit. And we have Yerushalmi, who's Chayev in Tedvav, but he's also reading in Yudalit. So this year we happen to read at the same time. So I show up in Yerushalayim and I walk into a shul. Could be that I can't be Yotze. Because if assuming the Baal Kored is a Yerushalmi, his Chiyuv, according to one possibility in Turi Evin, is only a lower Durabalan Chiyuv. Whereas my chiyuv as a ben yudalit is midivrei kabbalah, and it could be therefore that I can't be yotze from a yerushalmi. Yeah, chala. Yeah. So yeah, okay, I forgot. Okay. But there's a more fundamental question you have to ask. Yeah.
That's how according to Rav Yosef, he has to say that Anshei Knesset HaGedolah had built it in.
Because how could a later bet then come up? Oh, you do understand.
But why do we need to say?
Yeah, good point. Very good. Very good. Everyone makes that point in the footnote here. The Turi Evan assumes. The Turi Evan assumes. You did it very correctly. Rav Yosef has to not claim that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah themselves created the idea of Mukafot Choma reading on Yud Daled when it's Shabbat. Rabba could say that it was a later Beit Din, but why does he have to? Maybe Anshei Knesset HaGedolah did build it in. He makes that point also, Rabbi Mon, in the footnote. Yes? But the real point here is we don't know who's right anyway, Rabbi Rabbi Yosef. The real point here is what we call a chakira. There are two ways that you could potentially understand it. Lamaase, we do recommend that Yerushalmim have their own minyanim and other people have their own minyanim, and that we not, even though it happens to be reading on the same day, that we not have Yerushalmim read. Or if you want, I guess you could have somebody reading in Yerushalayim. Because a Ben Yudalit, a Ben Ir, someone from outside the city, someone from Tel Aviv, that's where the modern post can all talk about Yerushalmim and Tel Avivim. I guess because when Shayla first came out, that was the only other big city. Right, so Tel Aviv could read in Yerushalayim, and that's okay. Tel Aviv, he's really supposed to read on Yudalit, so he's got the Chiyuv Midivrei Kabbalah. The Yerushalmim, we're thinking, might have a lower chiyuv, so the higher chiyuv can be mostly the lower chiyuv, just not the other way around. You could bring, someone could drive in from Tel Aviv in the morning and read in Yerushalayim, that's okay, for the Yerushalmim. But if that same Tel Aviv shows up in Yerushalayim and wants to listen to Yerushalmim, or if Yerushalmim goes out there and wants to read for them, that could potentially be a problem. There's a bigger question. There are two ways, once we're saying that that Yerushalmim are reading in Yud Daled, there are two ways in which you can understand that. You could look at it as another example. The Mishnah began Megillah Nikra Yud Aleph Yud Bet Yud Gimel Yud Daled Tzedva. Right? We talked about those Bnei HaKfarim, the villagers, who sometimes read on the 11th, 12th, or the 13th. That's called Kriya Shelo Bizmana. Meaning, it's not the din is not that in a kfar the mitzvah of Megillah is on the 11th or the 12th or the 13th. No. The Bnei HaKfarim are really supposed to read on the 14th. But recognize, for example, let's say you're in a kfar. You're in a tiny village of 10 people. And there happens to be a guy who actually knows how to read Megillah. Do you have to go into the city and read it 2 days early? No. The Chachamim gave a license to the Bnei HaKfarim in order to make sure that Pesuma Nisa is done, that if they need to, they can read it a few days early, as early as the 11th, depending on how the calendar works out. But that's called Kriya Shelo Bizmana. Now, Kriya Shelo Bizmana has a number of things that make it different. Primarily the following. Kriya Shelo Bizmana is an option not for individuals, but for groups. What do I mean by that? The Gemara, again in Masechet Megillah, and Daf Hey, brings down the following machloket. Amar Rav, Megillah bizmana korin ota afilu biyachid, shelo bizmana be'asara. Rav Asi amar, bein bizmana bein shelo bizmana be'asara. The machloket is whether Megillah bizmana can be read by an individual. I'll say I'm sitting in my house by myself, and I have a Megillah and I know how to read it. Can I be yotzei the mitzvah by myself, or do I have to go to shul? So according to Rav Asi, even Megillah Bizmana has to be Be'asara. Why? I shouldn't say has to. There's a whole machloket here, whether these machloket is B'chatchilo or B'diyed. But the principle is that a fundamental aspect of Mikra Megillah is the principle of Pesuma Nisa. And therefore, if I'm by myself, or I'm on the Tzibor, so perhaps it's not Pesuma Nisa. So that's machloket between Rav and Rav Asi, whether Bizmana, or we're probably asking like Rav, that although it's certainly preferable to do it with Tzibor, that the person's unable, normally speaking at least, then you can read it even by yourself and make a bracha at least. But that's only when it's Bizmana. When it's Shelo Bizmana, it's a different story. Meaning, if I live in a village, I live in a kfar, and Purim is on Wednesday, so my village, we don't have anyone who knows how to read Megillah on Wednesday. But we're all going to be in the big city on Monday, 2 days earlier, on Yud Bet. So there's a halacha that says that we're allowed to go to the city, the whole village shows up on Yud Bet, and we get somebody from the city to come, and we go to a shul someplace, and we have a special Mikra Megillah. That's okay, as long as we come as a group, as a tzibur. But I, as a individual villager, if I happen to be in the city on Yud Bet, I can't read Megillah B'yachid. That, both Rav and Rav Asi agree to. Now, that's the situation for the villagers who read on the 11th, 12th, or 13th. How do we view the idea of Mukafot Choma reading on Yud Dalid because Tetvav is on Shabbat? Do we say, and this is a very similar chakira to what we said a minute ago in the Turi Eden, in a sense I'm taking it, not me, but we're taking it now to the next level. Do we say that really the Yerushalmim are supposed to be reading on Tedvav? Because that's the day in which their chiyuv is. However, because it's Shabbat, and we can't read on Shabbat, we invoke the principle of Megillah Nikrei, Yudalot Yubed, and Gimel Yudalot or Tetvav. And that Yerushalmim, this year, who read on Yudalot, are equivalent to villagers who read on Yudbet. In other words, it's Kriya Shelo Bizmana. Or do we say no? That's because the villagers really should be reading on Yudalot, but we gave them the option if they can't do it on Yud Dalet. They're going to be in the big city on Yud Dalet. We'll let them read on Yud Dalet. But that's not the situation now. Because Yud Tetvav is on Shabbat, they have to read on Yud Dalet. It's considered Bizmana. L'may nafkamina. Can somebody in Yerushalayim this year read as a Yachid? If you hold that it's Kriya Bizmana, that the real Zman for Megillah this year is Yud Dalet even in Yerushalayim, so then it's no different than any other year. And if somebody can't, obviously you should still go to shul, but somebody can't make it to shul. So then they'd be allowed to read it by themselves, with a bracha like every other year. But if you hold that what's going on in Yerushalayim this year has a din of Kriya Shelo Bizmana, in the same way a villager can't show up in your city or somewhere else and decide to read it on your bed. The Shulchan Aruch brings down a case, for example, let's say you're going on a person's got to travel, and the boat is leaving on Yud Gimel Adar. And he doesn't have the gila to bring on the boat, and he must get on the boat. So he knows in advance that he will not be able to read on Yud Aleph. So then he's allowed to read as early as Yud Aleph, but without a bracha. He's a yachid. There is an idea, some concept of Mikra Megillah already from Yud Aleph Adar, but he's not part of a community, he's an individual, he reads it without a bracha. And the proof is that if he gets on the boat and finds out, guess what, there really is a Megillah on the boat, then he reads it again. And you're down with a bracha. Because an individual can't really be Osei with creation of Bismana, certainly not with a bracha. So the question is, how do we view Mikra Megillah and Yerushalayim this year? Is it Kriya Bismana or is it Kriya Shalom Bismana? So this, and therefore, would it require a tzibur, not only as a lechatchila, but to the point that you wouldn't be able to make a bracha if you're not in the tzibur. So this seems to be in Machloket Rishonim. The Ritva uses the idea of reading on Thursday or Friday, because the proper Kriya day is on Shabbat, as an example of Kriya Shelo Bizmana. In other words, the Ritva seems to clearly state that it's considered Kriya Shelo Bizmana. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, I'll quote you from the Rambam, it's in Hilchot Megillah, Paragalach Halacha Zayin, V'kol Eilu Shemakdimim V'korin Kodem Yudalid. Anybody who reads early prior to Yudalid ain't Korin Otap Pachod Me'asara. So the Or Sameach points out, who can't read without a tzibur? Anyone who reads on the 11th, 12th, or 13th. But once it's the 14th, and you're reading, even if it's not the day that you normally would, it's called Kriya Bizmana. So it seems to be a machloket between the Rambam and the Ritva. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't directly address our question, but the Mishnah Berurah seems to feel. Mishnah Berurah can be found in Siman Tav Resh Tzadi Sifkatan Samech Aleph. He gives examples of someone who reads Shelo Bizmana. He mentions either somebody who's going on a boat and has to leave early, or someone that's Dimitrami Yom Tedvav B'Shabbat, Ditzrichin HaMukafim L'Hagdim L'Kroto B'Erev Shabbat, B'Vadai Tzarif L'Kabetz Atzara L'Kriyato. So Mishnah Berurah seems to feel that it's considered Kriya Shelo Bizmana, and if you really, really, really need a tzibur. Now, Rav Yimon brings down here, there is a possibility that you could argue that even if it's called Kriya Shelo Bizmana, a yachid in Yerushalayim could still read with a bracha. Why? The Kriya Shelo Bizmana needs a tzibur. Right? An individual villager who shows up in the city on the 12th can't read. However, the Ravid holds, brought down in the Orchot Chaim, that if the whole village goes to the city and reads on Yud Bet, and then there's one guy who shows up a little late and missed the reading, once there was a Tzibori reading in that place, then the Yachid can read in the same place with a bracha. And if that would be the case, then even if you hold Yerushalayim as Shelo Bizmana, once there are tzibur's reading Yerushalayim, an individual who's ill, let's say, and can't make it to shul, would still be able to read. So it is a machloket, and the bottom line is you really should make extra efforts this year to read b'tzibur more than you normally would. However, in a situation where that's not possible, a number of serious heavyweight halachic authorities, including the Chazon Ish, Rav Avad Yosef, Rav Chiel Michlo Tkachinsky, Rav Zonenfeld, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, all said that you can be naked on me with a bracha, if necessary.
So like these women...
Oh, excellent. So I'm just coming to that now. Now what happens with women? Many places you have a situation, pretty much everywhere, right, where if people have small children, you can't bring small children to shul or else they make noise and nobody's here, say. So usually it's women who wind up not going to, women who have small children, mothers with small children usually wind up not going, and then they always make these separate readings afterwards for the women. Now you don't have a minyan. So what are we going to do? Well, what all the women in Yerushalayim do? So in a sense it's the same question, but maybe not. There is an additional potential kula here. It could be that you need 10, but women count. Why? Because you need 10 people here. 10 women, as we all know, 10 women don't make a minyan. But it depends what you need. For example, the Gemara in Brachot is discussing the idea of a zimun, right? 3 women can make a zimun. Question whether it's a reshut or a chol, but 3 women can make a zimun. And the Gemara there seems initially to be confused and thinking that that women shouldn't be able to make a zimun because, at least the way Tosfos understands the Gemara there, you know, women, when we need minimum numbers of things, right? Women don't make a minyan. I think the Gemara there has an expression, Meya Nashi Kitrei Gabri Dan, right? You can have 100 women, it's still like you're having only 2 men, because, right? But then the Gemara says, no, that's not the case. It's not true. Because that's the case when, if you need a tzibur, we learn from Psukim that a tzibur, a halachic tzibur, has to be made up of men. And therefore, 10 men is a tzibur, but 100 women or 1,000 women is not a tzibur. But that's when you need a tzibur for something like a davar shebekdusha, to say kaddish, to say kedusha, baruch hu, chazarat hashatz, kriyat haTorah. But here, so zimun though, the issue is deyot. You need 3 people, 3 individuals who have 3 minds, and each one of them is saying for nakamazal. So that women is exactly the same thing as men, it says the Gemara there, or maybe it's not exactly the same thing, but we're not getting to zimun now. But there are those who say that the same thing is true here. Yes, you need 10 people, but you don't need 10 people because it needs a minyan. You need 10 people for pirsumei nisa, right? So if you have 10 people who are chayav in Megillah, not children, 10 people who are chayav to hear the Megillah, so then it could be, by the way, it probably should be 10 women. A mixture of men and women may not count. Same way the Gemara says that 3 women can make a zimun, 3 men can make a zimun, but you can't mix the two. It's pritzuta. But that's a 2 men and a woman, or 2 women and a man is not a zimun. So it could be that 5 men and 5 women, or 9 men and 1 woman, or vice versa, maybe it doesn't work. But if you have 10 women, some say that that's called a tzibur from Mikra Megillah. And therefore, so the bottom line is, halacha l'maaseh, therefore, more than usual this year, you should make efforts to get to a real minyan, a real tzibur, and hear the Megillah. Even an individual who cannot make it to shul, the impressive list of halachic authorities that I mentioned said that you can rely on the concept that for one reason or another you're allowed to make a bracha and do so. I would say the same thing for women. Women who are able to get to shul should make even more efforts this year to do so. But if they can't and they wind up at a reading that's set up for women, So that is certainly no worse than the individual who couldn't make it to shul and is allowed to read, and there's even more of a reason to think that once you have 10 women there, there's an additional reason why it may be possible to make a bracha, even if an individual would not. Okay, but it's all based on this question of whether reading in Yerushalayim this year is called Zman or not Zman. Yeah.
Well, are you always
No, I'm afraid you're going to do that. Okay. Okay, I'll regel achat. Okay, that's really a whole topic in its own. I want to make sure I have time for the other things, but just I'll regel achat. The idea of women reading for other women. Women are chayavot to read the Megillah, and therefore, presumably, if a woman is obligated, she can read it for herself and she can read it for other women. There are those who even wonder maybe a woman can read it for a man. That we basically do not say. The reason for that is that there are those who claim that although women have an obligation to Megillah, men have an obligation to Megillah, that it's not the same. Men are chayav in Kriya, women some think are chayav in Shmiya. Why that is a very interesting discussion that I won't get into now. There are even those who say that if women read the Megillah, or even a man reads the Megillah for women, let's say the guy already heard Megillah and then he comes to read for the women afterwards, so he was already yotzei, the people that are not being yotzei are all women, their son will say it should be a different bracha. Not al mikra megillah, but lishmo al megillah, something. In any case, so fine. So let's say women don't read for men, but if you have a group of women, they should be able to read for other women. There are those who are opposed to this practice on one of several grounds. Okay, first of all, this gets involved in the entire discussion of all these women's issues like Zimun and all these other things, which I have spoken about in the past and will be happy to do so at some point in the future, but unless we want to be here for the next 2 hours, let's not get into that right now. It's a serious, legitimate ideological debate about what we should change, what we shouldn't change, and whether the way to handle the problems nowadays is DAFKA to give women opportunities or DAFKA not to give women opportunities, and are we afraid of this is going to lead to that, or we're not afraid this is going to lead to that. And that's a discussion in its own right, which is not a purely halakhic one, but which ultimately is a halakhic question. Let's leave all that aside for now. Okay? And my positions on that, if anyone's interested, I've spoken about with many people individually and in groups, and I'm happy to do so again, but my position is more complex, like most things. But fine. In terms of the pure halakhic issue, in theory, why should you go ahead and what could be wrong with a bunch of women getting together and making a kriyat megillah? Some people say there's nothing wrong with it, and there are places where it's done. On the other hand, there is a potential objection that I know Rav Lichtenstein feels very strongly about, and others do as well, that megillah, the idea is for Rova Makrat Melech, and we're supposed to come together as a tzibur, not only the minimum of 10 people, but it even says in the Mishnah Berurah that let's say you have a large family or something. You happen to have 10 people around in your house. You're in a place and you happen to have 10 people. You're not supposed to read the Megillah, but rather you're all supposed to go to the shul anyway. You only have a minion, you have 10 people, but we're all about Hadran Melech. And there are tshuvot where yeshiva people have said, the shul's very noisy and the people aren't so serious, we want to make like a breakaway minion where we're going to do it right, and it's going to be Kriya L'Mahadrin and all of that. So if the situation is such that you go to shul and there's so much noise that you can't hear the Megillah, you're not Yotzei, so then obviously you can't go there. But as soon as that's not the case, we're very concerned, we say, even if it's not the main thing is that you should have large numbers of people to pursue minis, it's for Rabban Hadran Melech. And therefore, a group of women to break away, so that would, that would be a problem. Therefore, Rav Lichtenstein does not permit women's readings except in one of two cases. One is, it's well known that he allowed the people from the Drush at Lindenbaum years ago, and asked them if they could have a Kriyat Megillah there, and they do have a Kriyat Megillah there where girls read, and that was in fact endorsed by Rav Lichtenstein. Not necessarily this year, I'll come to this year in a second. I'll come to that in a second, but once we're done, let me just tell you the whole thing. And his logic, I heard this from him myself, he said that he doesn't want people to break away from the tzibur. However, he feels that's true when you're living in a community. If it's a girls' school and they live there and they learn there, and that is their community, he felt that if they want to read on their own, they're not obligated to get up and leave their little community and go to another community to get a Megillah. And therefore, in the context of a school, as opposed to in the context of a community, he thought that it would be okay. Or, in a different situation, we have this in our own shlut, that it's not a question of breaking away, the men are reading upstairs, the women are reading downstairs. No, the women should go to shul. But then you have some women with little kids who couldn't go to shul anyway. And Mimela, we're already having a second reading with 15 women, an hour later. And we already lost, for legitimate reasons, the robot I don't know here. Once these 15 women are getting together and need the Megillah, do you need to now get a man to come in and read for them? Or can one of them, if she knows how to get up and do it herself anyway? Right? So again, there are all kinds of ideological and quasi-ideological reasons why you might disagree, but the Lichtenstein at that point, once that's the situation, it's not people that are deliberately choosing to go there, but people that anyway didn't make it to shul, you could do it, and they have such a reading in our own shvut, they have such a reading in our own shvut. There are a few of them going on at the same time, men reading for women, and there's one where women read for other women, and that was endorsed by the Lichtenstein. I told my wife I have no problem with her going, but she doesn't want to go, so she doesn't go. But that's her issue. You can talk with her about that. Now, the question is, what about this year? So this year, based on what we're talking about here, so again, there are certainly many who disagree with Lichtenstein in one direction or another. Let's take his side. This year, so I would say the following. If the case of the girls' school, where in theory they could get up and go to a shul down the block, they just don't want to. They'd rather read it themselves, for whatever reasons. And as Rukminsky said, even though normally we talk to people about shul, since this is their community, they don't have to go to shul. So in that case, you could say, fine, that's an irregular. But now that there's a question about whether they're going to be yotzei without 10 men, because it maybe should create a shul bizman, and even though there's a lot to rely on, but why should you put yourself in that situation? And you could say, fine, next year, when it's on a regular tekvav, so then you'll do that. But if you're in your shul, and this year, then, you know, leave the Megillah in school and go down the block and go here in the shul. And I believe, although I'm not 100%, but I believe that Rav Lichtenstein put that stipulation into his psak in the Mal Mosa, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But in any case, one can certainly make one can. So I'm not sure. I may be wrong about that point, but certainly what they're doing it. Okay, so I assume they have someone. But one could certainly make that argument that in a regular year it's one thing, but if it's Kriya Shalobis, potentially Kriya Shalobis Mana, that it could be different. On the other hand, in the other situation, we have this group of women who anyway is already having a reading just for these 15 women. So again, at that point, if you say it doesn't matter who gets up and reads, it's still, you don't have a minion anyway. So at that point, there might be no difference, right? You see the point?
Right, but for them.
Once you have these women, then this is the minion in shul. Because they're little kids, right? So now, these women, someone's going to get up and read the Megillah for these, let's say, 15 women, right? Here in Yerushalayim. Now, so according to some, there's a possibility that it's creation of Isma. Now, we already said, based on a bunch of different things, we're going to let them make a bracha. At that point, it makes no difference if a man gets up and reads for them or if one of them gets up and reads for them, right? If they could have gotten to shul and heard from a man, that would have been better. Even more so this year than in other years. But once that didn't happen anyway, because they had little kids that were making noise, so now we're back to the same situation. At that point, it makes no difference who actually reads them. The problem is not who reads the Megillah. The problem is having a reading just for women.
Right.
Once you have to have a reading just for women, then it's back to the same situation.
Well, basically, like, not to pick on Brahmins or anything, there's less of a reason for them to be doing it this year than, like, the wives of all the
child. One could claim.
One could claim.
That, and again, I don't want to be quoted as, I'm not sure, but one could claim that even if you accept Rav Lichtenstein's two situations where it's legitimate to have a separate reading for women, by women, so then, even if you accept, right, one could claim that this year, it would be improper for a group of girls in a girls' school to decide to read it themselves when they do have the option to go to shul and be in a place where there are 10 men and thereby avoid the question. But in the other situation where the women already missed the minyan and there are no 10 men, at that point it makes no difference whether it's a man or a woman actually reading the Megillah. Right. Okay. Alright, so that's in terms of whether this is called Kriya Bizmana or Lo Bizmana. That's as far as Mikra Megillah is concerned. What about all the other mitzvot of Purim in the year of Purim Meshulash? Which day do you say Al HaNisim? So, the Beit Yosef writes in, first of all, before we get to Al HaNisim, Matanot Ev Yonim. Oh, how do you know it goes to Megillah? Rabbi Yosef told us that Einayim Shalom Aniyim Nesuot the Mikra Megillah, and therefore, presumably, if we're going to read the Megillah on Friday, Matanot Ev Yonim must be given on Friday also, and that's why Matanot Ev Yonim are always given on the same day as Megillah. But, so now we know that on the four mitzvot of Purim, we have moved Matanot Ev Yonim and Megillah from Shabbat, when they really should have come out, and from Tevah back down to Yudalim. As we move Megillah to Yudalim, and Matanot Ev Yonim gets pulled along with it. What about Al HaNisim? When do you say Al HaNisim? So the Beis Yosef writes in Siman Tafresh Pechet that the minhag in Yerushalayim is not to say Al HaNisim on Friday, the day they read the Megillah, but to read it on Tevah, on Shabbat itself. And then that's also when you take out the Sefer Torah and read by Abba Amalek. And the Beit Yosef says, Tmihani, I don't understand this, it's very strange. Lama lo yomu al nisim biyom shishi, shebo karina b'hilah. The Beit Yosef says, you know, it seems to me that you should read it on the 14th. That's the day you read the Megillah, that's when you should say al nisim. Nevertheless, the minhag in Yerushalayim, he already records, was to say it on the 15th, and therefore in Shulchan Aruch, he wrote that that's what you do. That's why Rome points out here in the Sefer, Gam Dvarim Shalom Avinim Tzarich Lasov. Sometimes that's apparently the practice, and that's what should be done. But it's interesting that the Beit Yosef thought that it should have been done on Yudalit. And what's really behind that is a very fundamental question, which we'll see is relevant in the Masa in a few minutes. Which day really is Purim in Yerushalayim this year? which day really is Purim? So the you could say that Purim is really on Tefach. Shabbos is Purim, but there are certain mitzvot that we can't do on Shabbat, so we have to move some of them earlier and some of them later. But that doesn't change the fact that Shabbat is Purim. Or maybe not. Maybe. In fact, we'll see that there's a good reason to suggest maybe Purim can, that Purim itself really can't be on Shabbat. Maybe Purim, if we move the Megillah to Friday, then maybe Purim is really on Friday. And we'll see that that makes a big difference. What? And then maybe, well, the Beit Yosef, he doesn't talk about the Kriya, but maybe he would do the same thing for the Kriya. If you were to, I don't know. The Beit Yosef said, the minhag in Yerushalayim is that they give Matan and Yavonim on Friday with the Megillah, but they say Al Nisim on Shabbat, and they read the Torah on Shabbat. Then he says, I don't understand why I think they should say Al Nisim on Friday. He doesn't talk about the Kriya of the Torah, but maybe he'd say the same thing. But the practice is that we say Al Nisim on Shabbat, and we read the Torah reading on Shabbat, and since it's Shabbat, it's also a Haftarah. Right, normally on Purim there's no Haftorah. But since Shabbat is a Haftorah, and Haftorah is the same Haftorah you read last week on Parshat Zachor.
Just thinking
that
Al-Hanikim on Shabbat
and
everything on Shabbat, does that not give support
that
that is the day of Shabbat
and
we are reading the day of
Shabbat? I don't know if those two things are connected. You could say that Purim is on Shabbat, but Mikra Megillah, that Zman for Mikra Megillah, is on Friday. You could say that. It could go all together. Right. What you said makes some sense. You could say that if you hold that Purim is really on Shabbat, that means that the reading of the Megillah on your Dalit is Shalom Zman. If you hold Purim is really on Friday this year we cancel the idea of Shushan Purim and basically move Purim to Friday, and then it would be Kriya Bismana. But I don't know if you have to say that. You could say that Purim is on Shabbat, but Megillah Bismana is on Friday, especially because your Dalit is Zman, Mikra, Megillah in other places. So, it could be connected, it doesn't have to be. They talk also about the question of the Brach of Shechiyanu. Normally you make the Brach of Shechiyanu on Purim, you make it at the Mikra Megillah, and it covers the Mikra Megillah, and it also covers the day itself, and it also covers the various mitzvot that you do during the day. But what happens this year when you make Shechiyanu, when you have Mikra Megillah on Friday, and some of the mitzvot are done on Friday, and Purim itself might be on Shabbat, and some of it's what you're not doing until Sunday. So there are those who are nohag to make sure to wear a new beged on Shabbat and say Shechiyan on that, and also have in mind that it should go for Purim. I don't know. I guess maybe you, I don't know. I never saw that book. Rav Shlomo Zalman said you don't have to do that. You can have Shechiyan on Friday and have in mind that it covers everything for the next couple of days. So, now, what about the Seuda? So, let's assume that Purim really is on Shabbat for a moment. So we moved Mikra Megillah to Friday, and with it we moved Matan Levyon. But Purim remains on Shabbat, let's assume. That's why we say Al Nisim, and that's why we read the Torah. So why don't we need to see about Purim on Shabbat? You ought to eat a meal on Shabbat. So there are a few possible reasons why we don't eat the Seuda Purim. And then we'll have to ask if we're not doing on Shabbat, why Sunday and not Friday? We'll get to that in a minute. But so there's a Yerushalmi in Masechet Megillah that says that the Seuda has to be made earlier. I'm sorry, has to be made later and not earlier, and also not to be put on Shabbat itself, because it says La'asot otam yimei mishte v'simcha at a pasuk. And you can't mix the simcha shetzluya b'beit din with simcha shetzluya b'beit shemayim. In other words, Purim and Shabbat don't mix. You can't observe simcha Purim on Shabbat. Even because Purim can't be Purim properly if it's also Shabbat, or Shabbat can't be Shabbat properly if it's also Purim. The two just don't mix. And therefore, we shouldn't have Simchat Purim on Shabbat. And by the way, that might also have some ramification for the question of which day really is Purim. Maybe the Yerushalmi was telling us that Purim cannot be on Shabbat, and Purim, therefore, maybe has to be moved to a different day, and Shabbat really isn't Purim, and maybe that's part of why the Beit Yosef couldn't understand saying Al-Nisi. By the way, that question is Mashpia also. I should mention this point also. Those of us outside Yerushalayim have a separate problem with the Suda Purim. For those of us outside Yerushalayim, it's very clear what is Purim. Purim is Friday. That's no question at all. It's Yudalid and it's Purim. The only thing that's different for us this year, us non-Yerushalayim, is the question of how to work out the Su'udat Purim in such a way that it doesn't interfere with Shabbat. Normally we do the Su'udat Purim towards the very end of the day, and you're not really supposed to have a Su'udah late in the afternoon on Friday, and it's going to mess up Shabbat, one of the stories. There are two possible ways to overcome this problem. The more common approach is to have the Su'udat Purim early, to start it before Chatzot, or at least before Mincha Gedolah, and to finish it up several hours before Shabbat, and then to have your Suda Shabbat on Shabbat. There is another option, which those of you learning Gemara this year will acquaint you with. It's called Poreis Mapo Mekadesh. Right? You can start the Suda Purim late in the afternoon on Friday, and let it go right into Shabbat, make Kiddush in the middle of the meal, and there are those who actually do this. There are a number of reasons, a number of objections that are raised why it's... You could daven mincha beforehand, you could daven ma'ariv after the meal. One of the reasons why people are opposed to it is that you might wind up davening b'chibuk, and that's not a good thing. But you could, of course, arrange a minhag. Kabbalat Shabbat is a minhag, and you could take Kabbalat Shabbat in the middle of the meal. You could, in the middle of the meal, when it gets time for hadlakat nerot, the woman could get up in the middle of the meal and go over to the table and light the nerot. You then cover up the food on the table. You say kiddush. You sing the chadovi if you want in Kabbalat Shabbat. Continue speaking. Right. Then when you daven ma'ariv, you'll say by who? Okay. No. Shabbat begins. You said kiddush on a coast. That's what.
No, but if you're in the middle of the suda.
You can say kiddush in the middle of the meal. Say gemara. Horis ma'apul mekadesh. You can do it. It's right. So anyway, the point is, and there are a number of reasons why, although frankly, I think it's really cool and I'd love to do it, there are a number of reasons why it's perhaps not advisable halachically, one of which is the practicality of finding meaning for Ma'ariv, and a number of other issues that you have to deal with.
But
in addition to all the other factors, if what we just said based on Yerushalmi, the Purim and Shabbat shouldn't mix, right? So then if the whole reason that we don't do a Suda Purim on Shabbat is because Suda Purim is not supposed to be on Shabbat, so a Suda Purim that turns into a Suda Shabbat could perhaps be problematic.
That's
as well.
All the difference
is the same thing. No. That's okay. That's the Machlok in the Gemara, we pass converse back in the Kaddish. But if the idea is you're not allowed to mix the Simcha of Purim with Shabbat, but then doing it for a Sudat Chol, you sit down and eating a sandwich on Friday afternoon and it turns into Shabbat, and you convert that into a Shabbat meal, that might be one thing, but for Sudat Purim it might be a different issue. Anyway, yeah.
And how does that work in terms of drinking at the Sudah, and then jumping when you want to have a bottle of
beer? That's a whole question about, you had that question anytime you get drunk at a Purim Sudah. Kabbalat Shabbat is a minhag. You're not allowed to daven if you're drunk. And therefore, whatever you hold about the drinking, Seder, that problem exists on every year. Let's say it's not Shabbat, so Suda Purim, you start the Suda Purim, on a regular Purim, the Purim is on Tuesday, right? You start the Suda Purim, you finish it up, you go daven Ma'ariv. So whatever, again, that's a different shiur that we're not having, and I have plenty to say about drinking on Purim also, but not for now. But in any case, whatever Chayiv Inish L'Besume means, or whatever Ad Lo Yada means, and the Ramah does say that the bottom line is Echad Amar, Devi Echad Amamid, there are different interpretations, and you're allowed to do less, and you're allowed to do more, but number one. But besides that, all of the Achronim point out there are limits on what Ma'ariv means, and one of those limits is you have to be able to daven Ma'ariv. But that's got nothing to do with whether it's Shabbat or Chol, right? In fact, the opposite. If you're going to not do Purim Slap from a Kaddish, those of us who are going to start a Sudas Purim at 11 o'clock in the morning might be able to drink more than a regular year and still make it to Mincha, right? You might have a bigger tzvach than you do.
No, you're properly drunk.
Depends what properly drunk means. So different levels of properly drunk. But that is not the topic right now. I'm running late. I just want to finish a few more things.
Really, if you were to theoretically do that and have two Sudas mixed, you'd be better, what you say.
That's another one of the problems, right? Do you say Al Anisim? You have to say Ritzei. Do you also say Al Anisim? That's like a similar problem you have when you have Rosh Chodesh on Friday or right. Right. Correct. Okay. No. All right, you know what? Let's not get into that right now. Okay. Okay. So that's one reason. There's an additional reason why perhaps you should not have the Seuda on Shabbat. That is that the same way that Matanot Levyonim is connected to Mikra Megillah, Mishloach Manot may be connected to the Seuda. The whole discussion about Mishloach Manot, what the purpose of Mishloach Manot is, there are two opinions. One says that Mishloach Manot is simply a way of being Mardesh Shalom for Yud, to give people gifts, and it creates friendships among Am Yisrael, and others say that it's specifically connected to to the idea of Sudat Purim, to make sure everyone has food for Sudat Purim. There's all sorts of nafkamina between those two ways of understanding Mishloach Manot. But if you understand it the second way, then obviously Mishloach Manot has to be done the same day as the Sudat, and Mishloach Manot on Shabbat could be a problem. Perhaps there's a zero where we'll be afraid people will carry the Mishloach Manot on Shabbat and stuff like that. And if we have to move Mishloach Manot to a different day, we might have to move the Seudah as well. So now once we're moving the Seudah, there's two possibilities. We could move it to Sunday, or we could move it to Friday. Now in theory, which day would make more sense? Friday. That's the day we're already reading Megillah on Friday. And Friday's Purim everywhere else. So why would we move it to Sunday? So the Meiri actually brings a day that says, that's what you should do. You should have Seudah Purim on Friday. What? It's not that the Meiri is different. The Meiri is a Malachite. He brings down a lot of different opinions. So a lot of times it's people that he's quoting, it's not necessarily, but he is also often does have original opinions. But anyway. So there are a number of possible reasons why we would do Sunday. Once it can't be Shabbat, although you might say it makes sense to do it on Friday, there are a number of possible reasons why not. First of all, it could be that you have to wait for Tedvav to become Chayav. If Tedvav really is Purim, it could be you have to wait for Tedvav to get a Chiyuv in Seudah. And then we say, we can't do it today, we'll do it tomorrow. But you wouldn't be able to be the Yotzei beforehand if there's no Chiyuv yet. And the fact that you can do Megillah early is not a problem, because we already said, Megillah Nikre, you can do that Tedvav. So that's one thing. Also, we're not supposed to make on Erev Shabbat special Seudot. So if it comes out on Erev Shabbat because you're living in Dalet, that's one thing. But if we're already going to move it from where it belongs, we're not going to stick it out on Friday. We're going to stick it out on Sunday so that it doesn't interfere with Seudot Shabbat. And therefore the Pesach is that you do the Seuda on Sunday. And therefore the Mishloach Manot, which are maybe connected to Seuda, have to be done on Sunday as well. I just want to speak for a minute about the question of people traveling from and to Yerushalayim during the days of Purim and what the halacha is. Now, this is a question in a normal year as well. If people spend one day in one place and one day in the other place, in a regular year, there's a whole question what to do. It's a mission in Megillah. And the Mishnah also talks about situations where people were planning to do one thing and wound up changing their mind and having to do something else. And it's very, 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 very complicated. Okay. Normally, what we say is, in a regular year, that there are basically two ways of looking at this. Okay, Alot HaShachar seems to be the, let's leave out situations where you plan to do one thing and wound up doing something else. When you were planning to travel and come back and you wound up getting delayed or you came back early and you were expecting to, that's a whole different discussion. Let's assume that you had plans and you actually kept carry out those plans. So first of all, Alot HaShachar is the Kovaya. Okay? So, Yud Dalid, Alot HaShachar and Yud Dalid is the Kovaya. Which means that if I am in an unwalled city, a normal year I'm talking right now, if I'm in an unwalled city, on Alot HaShachar of Yud Dalid, then I am Chayav in Purim. And if I am not in an, if I'm in a walled city, okay, so on a normal year, okay, if I'm in Tel Aviv, on Alot HaShachar of Yud Dalid, I'm Chayav in Purim. Which means retroactively I needed to read the Megillah already last night, and it means today I have to do another Kriyat Megillah, and Mishloach Manah, and Matanit Nevi'im, and Seuda, and Al HaNisim, everything. If in a normal year I am in Yerushalayim on the morning of Yud Dalid, then today is not important for me, and I don't have to do anything today. The question is, So the determinant of whether you're chayav to keep Purim in Yud Dalid in an ordinary year is where are you on Yud Dalid. If you're in an unwalled city at Alot HaShachar of Yud Dalid in an ordinary year, then we hold you are obligated in Purim of Yud Dalid. And if you are not, if you are in a walled city at Alot HaShachar of Yud Dalid, you are not chayav in Yud Dalid. The machloket is what makes you chayav in Tetrav. Some say that the determining factor is where you are in the morning of Yud Dalid. If you're in an unwalled city in the morning of Yud Dalid, then your Purim is on Yud Dalid. If you're in a walled city in the morning of Yud Dalid, then your Purim is on Tetvav. Meaning, if you're in Yerushalayim on the morning of Yud Dalid, and then you go back and on the morning of Tetvav, you're back in Tel Aviv, you still have to keep Purim on Tetvav. Because the determinant is where were you on the morning of Yud Dalid. That's what some say. Others, however, say no. What makes you chayiv in Yud Dalid is being in an unwalled city there. What makes you chayiv in Tetvav is being in a walled city on the morning of Tetvav.
Then you miss Purim.
So if that's the case, you could miss Purim or have two Purims. Right? If you're in an unwalled city in the morning of Yud Dalid and a walled city in the morning of Tetvav, you could be chayiv to keep Purim twice. And as I always say, two Purims is a lot better than two Tisha B'Av. Right? Or if you have to pick a yontif to do two of, it's not a bad choice, right? But at the same time, if you wind up in Yerushalayim on the morning of Yud Dalid, and in Tel Aviv on the morning of Tetvav, then you can have no Purim at all. There's a story that he claimed, I don't know if it's true, but they claim that Professor Yeshayahu Leibowitz, who was Nechama Leibowitz's brother, who was a philosopher, and he was an Orthodox person, Orthodox Jew in practice with very unorthodox ideas. He was a scrupulously observant person, but he had very, very unusual ideas, and they claim, whether it's true or not, that he was very, very morally bothered by Purim. So many people died and were celebrating. He didn't want to celebrate Purim, so he used to arrange to do this, to spend the Purim in Yerushalayim and Yudal, and Yerushalayim and Tetvav, and therefore he never kept Purim. I don't know if it's a true story or not. I will tell you something I do know is a true story. Rabbi Brodsky had this situation. The Brodskys, one of their children, I guess it's their second child, was born on Purim and Yud Dalid in a hospital in Yerushalayim. So they came into the hospital, I think the story goes, either on Hanukkah or at the night of Purim. And the baby was born sometime in the night, and he obviously went with Mrs. Brodsky to the hospital. So on the morning of Yud Dalid, he was in the hospital in Yerushalayim. The baby was born on Purim. But then he couldn't stay in Yerushalayim the next day because he had another child he had to go back home to. So he wound up being in this situation. He was in Yerushalayim in the morning of Dalit. He was back home, and had to go back and sleep. So he called the Prof. Lichtenstein and asked what to do, and Psaki Dan was to read the Megillah that day without a bracha on Tetvav, because he was outside Yerushalayim. Okay? So that's in a normal year. Okay? So in a normal year, again, if you're outside Yerushalayim in the morning of Dalit, you're definitely chayav in your Dalit. And if you're inside Yerushalayim in the morning of Dalit, you're definitely not chayav in your Dalit. That's easy. The question is, what makes you chayav in Tetvav? Some say that the determinant of Tetvav, in other words, that makes it very easy. Wherever you are, the morning of Yud Dalid, that's what you keep. And where you go after that is irrelevant. That's one approach. And that would mean that anyone who's in Yerushalayim on morning of Yud-Dalet has to keep Ted Vav no matter where they are. But others say, no, Yud-Dalet, you're chayiv in Yud-Dalet if you're outside of Yerushalayim in the morning of Yud-Dalet. You're chayiv Ted Vav if you're in Yerushalayim on Ted Vav, and therefore you could theoretically be chayiv twice, or you could theoretically miss Purim altogether. This year, the question becomes more complicated by when really is Purim in Yerushalayim. In other words, we generally hold, as you saw from the psak that Reb Lichtenstein gave, that the mechayiv of Tetvav is Tetvav. Okay? And therefore people, Rabbi Brodsky was told, read the Misafik, but don't make a bracha. And alternatively, people that spend Yud-Dalet outside Yerushalayim and then come into Yerushalayim and sleep over and wake up in Yerushalayim on Tetvav are told to hear Megillah four times and to have two sudot and to do everything twice. This year it might be different. Because which day really is Purim? First of all, there's no question of reading Megillah four times. There's only two Mikra Megillahs this year, so that's okay. So obviously, if somebody, Rabbi Katz, is planning to spend Yud-Dalet in his house and then come to Yerushalayim for Shabbat. Right? So obviously he doesn't have to hear Megillah four times, because even if he was in Yerushalayim the whole time, he'd be reading Thursday night, Friday. But the question is, do we say what we'd say in a normal year and say now he has to have another Suda on Sunday and he should say Alanisim on Shabbat and all of that? Or do we say no? In a normal year, we'd say that the Mechayiv of Yerushalayim is Tetvav. But this year, even though we do some of the practices of Purim on Tetvav, and some things even on Tet Zayin, this year maybe the Mechayiv of Yerushalayim is Yud-Dalet, because that's the day of Mikra Megillah, and that's the day that the Beit Yosef really thought you should say Yalam Yisim, even though that's not what we do. So there is an argument to say that this year, even more so, someone who observed Purim on Yud-Dalet doesn't have to do it again on Tetvav. And conversely, someone who is in Yerushalayim on the morning of Yud-Dalet and outside Yerushalayim on the morning of Tevav might wind up missing Purim altogether. I'm sorry. Leaving Yerushalayim might be a little bit better this year, right? I'm sorry, right? There's more reason to say that you're okay if you're in Yerushalayim, then you would go out and say Al Anisim outside the city, and whatever the story is. Because it's Shabbat, normally you tell me, like, I always come to Yerushalayim on Shushan Purim. I always do, but I sleep at home, and it's not a problem. I come into NMY, no problem having another meal. It's fine. I just don't say Al Anisim, but I eat all the food, and NMY girls are good cooks, and it's great. Right? Same thing, right? But when it's Shabbat, obviously, it becomes more of an issue. So I just want to point out that it's a question all the time. It may be a slightly different question this year. But that's basically the story.
Thank you.